I'm going to tell you something today that will seem fantastic to you. And it would seem to be, at first blush, an incredible statement. Like, how could I possibly say something like this? And the only way I could say it is if I have scriptural evidence of it, and I do, because you can't make this up. And here's what I want to say to you. The world's first contact with the glory of God is a woman's hair. That's right, a woman's hair is the first indication that humanity at large gets that God is A, beautiful, and B, glorious. Now, you can't make this up. I'm going to quote to you now from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, and then verse 7 through 10. This is an issue of headship, and it's also an issue of glory. Paul says this, "Now I want you to be aware that the head of every man is Christ, yet the head of the woman is the man, yet the head of Christ is God." The head of Christ is God, and Christ in turn is the head of man. For a man indeed ought not to be covering his head, being inherently in the image and glory of God. Now we're getting new information. We're seeing a picture not only of headship, but of glory. Yet the woman is the glory of the man. This is important, this glory. And believe me, you're going to understand this by the time I'm finished. For man is not out of woman, but woman out of man. For also, man is not created because of the woman, but woman because of the man. This verse causes a lot of confusion. It causes men to lord it over women, and it causes women to think of themselves as not only second-class saints, but second-class citizens. This is the farthest thing from the truth. I won't have it. Therefore, the woman ought to have authority over her head because of the messengers, that is, because of the angels. Now, what I'm going to do for you now is show you a graphic. If you're watching the porch cam, you will see the graphic. If you're not watching the porch cam, you won't see the graphic, but you should go to the porch cam because this is important. This is how we typically see the relationship in this, what I call a glory train. We have God in large, bold face type, Christ, man, and woman. According to this picture, we could possibly think of God as the greatest and woman as the least. But this is not a description of greatness, but of glory. Here's what I mean by that. God is invisible. Glory is an effulgence. For instance, we have never seen the sun. We have only seen the corona, that is, the glory of the sun. The sun itself is invisible to us. And so the corona, the outshining, is the glory of the sun. God is invisible. Christ is his image. So Christ, being the image of the invisible God, is God's glory. We see God through Christ. Now, I insist to you that man is the glory of Christ if we're going to take this progression and be consistent and see it not only as headship, but of glory. Man, humanity, is the glory of Christ because Christ is presently invisible. He's not here on earth, but he is seen in living letters, living proclamations of Scripture, that is humanity. And Christ's spirit dwells in humanity. Therefore, man is the glory of Christ, that is, the effulgence, the visible representation of Christ in the world. This is not some kind of Pope doctrine where the Pope is the representation. I didn't say anything about representation. I said that humanity is supposed to see the glory of Christ in his saints. Now, let's not overlook this amazing statement that woman is the glory of the man. Just look at Proverbs chapter 31. There we see the classic Proverbs 31 woman. She gives the world a good impression of her husband because of her good acts, her good works, her steadfast care of her family. And in that context, the man sits by the gates. He doesn't really do anything. Read Proverbs 31, and it's the woman who gives the world a good impression of her husband. He's invisible, let's say, and she is his outward shining. She is his good face. She puts a good face on him. So the woman, stated here, is the glory of the man. Man is the glory of Christ. Christ is the glory of God. So now, let's take a second look at how this progression of glory should be understood. This is not a picture, a chart, a progression of greatness. We know God is greater than all, but this is a progression of glory. It goes from most invisible to most visible. Starts with God. All right, now here comes the remarkable statement. If Christ is the glory of God, and if man is the glory of Christ, and if woman is the glory of man, then what is woman's glory? Her hair. A woman's glory is her hair. 1 Corinthians 11:14, 15. Is not even nature itself teaching you that if a man indeed should have tresses, it is a dishonor to him? Yet if a woman should have tresses, that is, long hair that hangs down due to the wonderful benefit of gravity, it is her glory. 1 Corinthians 11:14 and 15. A woman's glory is her hair. So in this train of glory, it begins with God, but God's invisible. Christ is a visible manifestation of God. Christ hasn't shown up lately, so humanity, with the Spirit of God in them, is a visible manifestation of the glory of Christ. And a woman, as we learn from Proverbs 31, is the glory of a man. What's a woman's glory? Her hair. Woman is such a great creation that something else does not need to be created to be her glory. Rather, something on her person is her glory, and it is her hair. Now I'm going to show you this chart again, and this is how the chart should look. Okay, you're looking at the chart again, and now we have God in small type, light type, Christ in bigger type, man in darker type yet, woman in even more big, and then tresses, because this is a progression of visibility. So the startling thing is that a woman's tresses is the beginning of the glory train that leads back to God, who is invisible. It's all about glory. It's all about effulgence. It's all about a shining forth. And the world's first glimpse of God's magnificence is a woman's hair, and women instinctively know this. In the marriage covenant, a woman is the glory of the man in that she represents the man to the world at large. By extension, she also represents God to the world at large. So let's take one more look at that chart real quick, the glory chart. I call it the glory train, and let's make some deductions here. In this graphic representation of headship, that which goes before is the head of the subsequent. That is, that which comes after. Yet the subsequent is the glory of that which goes before. Therefore, while God is the head of Christ, Christ is God's glory, that is, his outward shining. And while Christ is the head of man, man is Christ's glory, that is his outward shining. And while man is the head of woman, woman is man's glory, his outward shining. And while woman is the head of her own hair is her glory. The important thing to note here, ladies and gentlemen, is that female tresses are the last thing in a list of effulgences, that is, shinings, radiances, that began with God. And the conclusion, I realize, is quite startling. The conclusion is that a woman's tresses are the world's first contact with the glory of God. Women instinctively know this. Look at all the women's hair care products. If you go to Walmart, or if you go to especially a beauty store, there are whole stores dedicated to a woman's hair. Women instinctively know that they must take care of their hair. The world looks at their hair. They know that this is a valuable part of them, but they don't understand why. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11:14, nature itself teaches you that if a man indeed should have tresses, it's a dishonor to him. You see a man with long hair, and you don't know why, it just looks weird. Like, that guy's a weirdo. He's some kind of a nut, he's a hippie. But if a woman has long hair, it's a different story. Wow, that's glorious. Nature itself teaches you. Paul doesn't even quote a scripture verse here. He doesn't need one. He's actually using nature as a teacher. And as I said, men and women both love to see a woman's long hair. Now I'm going to show you some video clips that I snatched from YouTube of women letting their hair down. I mean, this to me is a phenomenon. And both men and women admit that it's beautiful. These women in these videos are so proud of their hair, and this hair coming down, I mean, wow. Might say, Martin, you're just lusting after these women. Well, yeah, but there's something far greater going on here than lust or a desire for that beauty. In a woman's hair, I and the rest of humanity, even though they don't realize it, I realize it because I'm educated, because I'm learning this from Scripture. I realize that God is invisible, and it's frustrating because I can't see Him. But the glory train leading to God begins with a woman's hair. It's mystical. It's magical. But I won't even say that because I don't want to sound too New Agey here. I'll just say that it's nature. Nature itself tells you that there's something wonderful about a woman with long hair. But there's something weird about a man with long hair. The stars declare God's handiwork, sure, but a woman's hair declares a mute declaration of His glory. That is His beauty. When a woman lets down her tresses, men go numb. They are rendered speechless, except for me. I have lots of speech when it comes to this. Even women admire it. They admire each other's hair all the time. They're jealous of it. They're envious of other women's hair. Solomon writes of his beloved Shulamite in the Song of Songs, chapter 7, verse 5. He says, "Your head upon you is like caramel, and the tresses of your head are like purple. A king is bound by the strands." A king is bound by the strands of a woman's hair. How is a king, a man who is in authority over an entire kingdom, how is he bound by a woman's hair? It's not literal. It's metaphorical. He's affixed. He can't move. He's bound in that he's rendered motionless and speechless, except for me. So even the mere strands of the Shalomite, Solomon's lover, even the mere strands of her tresses has the power to stop the king in his tracks. And again, not even other women can take their eyes from the wonder of a woman's cascading locks. So I want you to notice what a complete creation is the woman. To glorify himself, God creates another being, Christ. To show the glory of Christ comes yet another being, Adam. The glory of Adam requires yet another being, who's Eve. Eve, being the latest and greatest creation of God, is so complete that rather than requiring the creation of another being to glorify her, something on her person fulfills that role, and that is her tresses. I know how bizarre all this has to sound, but we're dealing with a God here who in past eras has used goats, sheep, and the tar that waterproofed the ark to picture his son. Yet the tar was the propitiation. It was the pitch that protected the people inside. It was a picture of Christ. Tar smeared on the ark was a type of Christ, as are goats, sheep, lambs. So Martin Zander, did not invent this hair revelation. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 11. A woman's tresses, concordant version, are the glory of the woman. Who's the glory of the man? Who's the glory of Christ? Who's the glory of God? Thus, by extension, a woman's tresses are the glory of God. If you want to skip all the intermediaries there, Christ and man and woman, the thing starts with God and it ends with a woman's tresses. So, a woman's tresses are the glory of God. They are the glory of God. Simple. In the realm of humanity, God's glory has to begin somewhere. In our realm, in this world where we live, where we see stuff, we see trees, we see birds, we see ants, we see all kinds of things. In the realm of humanity, God's glory has to begin somewhere. And again, women instinctively know that it's their hair. They spend more money beautifying it than anything else on their person. And the next time you're at Walmart, I want you to look at the rows and rows of women's hair care products. And then just for fun, try to find the men's hair care products.